This is Alan Karpik with Tom Dienhart and Ralph Taylor. And on this sad day, the passing of Leroy Keyes earlier this morning. In fact, Ralph was the one that made me aware of this and of this difficult day. And yet, Ralph, I'll start with you. You've been very close to Leroy, been around him here in the last couple of weeks. Leroy's a man of faith and a man of great strength. And yet, this was a difficult day for anyone that knew him.
Oh, absolutely, Alan. I was so shocked this morning. I looked at my phone and I had this text at 7:26, and there was a question from one of my fraternity brothers: did Leroy pass? And I'm thinking, somebody's spreading rumors, because I saw Leroy Sunday doing good, very upbeat. So then I called Leroy's wife, and she did say that Leroy passed peacefully this morning at 5:17. And I'm still in shock about it. But like I say, when I saw him Sunday, he was, I put him on the phone with one of our fraternity brothers up in Lansing, Illinois. They were talking and talking trash like Leroy always likes to do. And really good spirits. And just, you know, I thought, boy, he just looks so upbeat. Looked like he's just going to overcome all odds and beat this. And it was just so stunning and shocking to hear the news this morning.
You know, Tom, you know, you'd written this, and you were a little bit younger than I am, but had an opportunity to write a great story in the Alumnus on Leroy and his impact. You know, your reaction to today's news and what he has meant to Purdue sports.
Yeah, obviously sad, like Ralph said. You know, for me, Leroy lived in my mind's eye, I guess, through film clips, through football cards, through still photographs, through memories my dad would tell me about Leroy, talking about, they would say, give the ball to Leroy in Rossage Stadium. He kind of, growing up, we didn't have the internet. We had zillions of highlights of everybody. So he kind of created these images in your head about people, and they're almost mythical in some ways. And Leroy was kind of mythical for me, being a Purdue kid, going to games, going to Rossage Stadium, always hearing about Leroy Keyes and third pick in the NFL draft, almost won the Heisman Trophy twice. I mean, my gosh, to me, I said, really, Dad, a guy from Purdue almost won the Heisman Trophy? And he was this great. They won the Rose Bowl in 1966. So, yeah, I mean, and as a student, guys, Alan was working in the SID office. It was the fall of 1987, 100th anniversary of Purdue football. And that year they had a vote for the all-time Purdue team. And of course, Leroy Keyes was crowned the best football player in the first 100 years of Boilermaker football. And again, I don't think he's going to fall off that throne anytime soon. I know Drew Brees was great, but in college, I think Leroy May was probably a better player, more acclaimed player, just at least as a claim. But anyway, my point is he was just a titanic figure. And I got to talk to him, as Alan said, for that story in the Alumni Magazine. It was on the 50th anniversary of the 1968 team. And I got to talk to Leroy once on the sidelines at a game. And Alan talked before we got on camera about him being 6'3". And that's something I never really realized, is the presence of Leroy as a big guy.
Yeah.
And a guy like that running the football full speed, I couldn't imagine trying to tackle him.
You know, Ralph, you have many things in common with Leroy. One of them being one of the all-time fan favorites, which you were on the basketball court at the same time as Leroy, and you were in the same academic class, right? So,
yeah.
As well, Leroy, you know, a favorite too, to say the least. I mean, again, as Tom said, iconic in terms of what he brought to the table. He loved to play basketball. He used to tell me the story about how he and Rick Mount, I don't know if this is legend or not. It might be a little bit embellished, but that he and Rick used to get together and either play horse or one-on-one. I don't know what the deal was. I don't know that Rick would ever admit to that, losing to him. But Leroy said he could hold his own. He was a phenomenal athlete, Ralph. I mean, the guy could kick off. He was, he made the Rose Bowl anniversary team as a defensive back for his performance in 1966-67 Rose Bowl. There wasn't anything Leroy Keyes could not do on the athletic field.
Absolutely. And here's a guy in high school, ran 100-yard dash under 10 seconds, very fast in the 220. Basketball averaged over 24 points a game. Track and field, a long jump over 24 feet. outstanding football player. Comes to Purdue. And, of course, coming from the segregated South, nobody really knew about him because segregated South, Black schools got no publicity. And here came this guy on campus, 6'3", about at that time, before he started eating dorm food, weighed about 195 pounds. And we used to go to the co-rec. Me and Leroy, Herm Gilliams, some of the other guys that played basketball, Herm and I, we just, after one game, we looked at Leroy and said, man, how come he's not on a basketball scholarship?
Yeah,
he was just really that good, just simply a very gifted athlete. Picked up golf club, never played golf in his life, became an outstanding golfer after Purdue. And, you know, that's an interesting thing he'd always tell me was Bob DeMoss would always tell Leroy what he couldn't do as a football player. And he kept explaining to Bob that you never saw me play in high school where I kicked off, I threw passes. And finally, DeMoss said, okay, let me see you do this. So at one point, as a Purdue football player, Leroy was involved with kickoffs because he had the best leg on the team, because at that time, Bob Greasy was doing the kickoffs. And remember, he was a quarterback, so he could have easily been injured, but Leroy proved to DeMoss that he could kick off.
You know, Leroy, as a, I think in his career, and I should have done my research on the front, I think he threw 12 passes as a quarter, as a running back. Purdue had a great halfback option with him. In fact, and I think 7 or 8 went for touchdowns.
Exactly.
I mean, there's nothing he could not do. And I loved his story. And I hope people will go back to our site, because did a story on him on Golden Black Biography in 2014. He told a great story about playing pickup games in the Newport News, Virginia area against the, and the white schools want to play against them. They wanted to see who this guy was. And it wasn't just Leroy. There were other super talented players down there, student athletes, et cetera, in that area. And those stories are just, they're hard to believe in today's world. Sometimes yes, sometimes no, where we are in this world, but unbelievable his talent. From that standpoint. And yes, you can ask Gene Cady when he would swing from the heels. I think when you watch, Gene Cady was the fastest swinger I'd ever seen from a driver in golf. Leroy never got cheated either. And they had some phenomenal golf matches. And there are many that Leroy became a terrific golfer as well. And the thing that Leroy was great about, guys, is, at least for me, and Ralph, you knew him better, but always positive. I know there were times when he might have been down some, but boy, I didn't see it very often. And Leroy had some ups and downs in his life from a health perspective and other things, like we all did and have done. But this is a guy that stayed positive, found the good things, always willing to help somebody out, and to educate folks about things that he went through, things he experienced. And I value that a great deal. Tom, I was going to ask on your front, you know, you look at when you had a chance to talk to him a couple of years ago, that experience of being, you know, and we talked a little off air during that time. It was a turbulent, very much of a turbulent time on campus, not only the Vietnam War, but social justice issues as well. Much of what we're experiencing today. Leroy was at least from my perspective, a courageous and maybe somewhat quiet leader in the movement on campus. And I don't know how much he talked about that in that article, but I thought I'd like both of you guys to comment on that. I'll start with you, Tom.
Yeah, exactly, Alan. That was something that intrigued me. I'd gotten well-versed with Leroy's football accomplishments, but I never really knew about his involvement as far as being a socially active person on campus, as far as dealing with race relations and whatnot. And he played a big role in getting that Black Cultural Center established. You know, he was involved with some marches on campus that I'm sure I'd love to hear Ralph share some stories about that. Big part of some of the unrest on campus, trying to have his voice heard, him and his fellow students have their voice heard. And that was a turbulent time on campus. Before we came on the air, Ralph and I talked a little bit about, of course, the late 60s, where you watch the newsreels today, still of all the unrest that went on on college campuses across the country. And I guess I never really knew about the unrest at Purdue. And that's what interested me. And then to find out Leroy was part of it, you know what, that takes some guts to be a high profile athlete, to be an African-American athlete at Purdue University at that time, and to be socially active, had to take some guts. And Ralph was there, and he walked that walk. And I mean, again, that interested me, and Leroy shared some of those stories. And I know Ralph could probably expound on those a lot further than I.
Ralph, your memories of that, and there are many, and probably could go into longer than we're going to talk here. But there was a significant he made a significant impression not only on your fellow African American students, but also all students at Purdue University.
Yeah, and I think if I go back to when we entered as freshmen, we came in as freshmen, all together, the African-American population on campus out of 25,000 students, there were less than 80 of us.
Yeah.
So when you're that few, you learn how to navigate the system, and you realize the importance of sticking together. But I'll never forget, it was our first week on campus, and Leroy stayed in H1, which was Owen Hall.
Owen Hall, yeah.
And Herm Gilliam and I, we stayed in H3. We were roommates in Wally Hall. Mm. And for whatever reason, me, Herman, Leroy, a couple other guys, about five white guys, we met in the dorm room. All at once, we just started talking about what we had learned about each other. In terms of black learning about white, vice versa. Basically what our parents had told us.
Yeah.
And remembering Herman comes from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Leroy from Newport News. Neither one had ever been around white people. Mm-hmm. So here we are, we're talking, and everybody's kind of sharing what their parents told them. And I'll never forget, it gave me a whole different perspective on what a class valedictorian really knows. This guy, he was a freshman, he was a valedictorian from Gas City, Indiana. And he looked at us with all sincerity, and he said, "You guys have tails."
Yeah.
And we looked at him, and we thought, "What do you mean tails?" He said, "You know, like lions and tigers." So we had this pose look. So Leroy stood up, and he motioned for Herman and I to stand up, and Leroy pulled his pants down. Herman and I, we pulled our pants down. We asked the guy, "Do you see any tails?" And the guy was in shock. Said no, and you know, from that moment on, I think that kind of set the stage in terms of how Leroy really became a difference maker.
Yeah.
He was very open with his thoughts and comments, and he was one of those quiet leaders. You know, a lot of folks want to be loud and do nothing.
Yeah.
Then you have those quiet leaders who really get things done, and that was Leroy. And a lot of times when he is dealing with adversity, not only on the football field as freshman sophomore, but also on campus. And he would go and have a talk with Jack Mollenkopf. And after that conversation, things that Leroy is dealing with would be ironed out.
Yeah.
And I think things came to a head in the spring of 1968, because up until this time, there was not one black faculty member on campus. Students were dealing with a lot of discrimination. Black students were dealing with a lot of discrimination in the housing, and also from professors. Athletes kind of had a double standard. We were kind of omitted from all of that. But Leroy and others felt, you know, even though we're athletes, we might be getting the pass, we're still friends with our other fellow students, so we need to stand up for them. So Leroy Keyes, Eric McCaskill, myself, Herm Gilliam, a lot of the African-American athletes took part in the march to Hovey Hall, where we lay one brick at a time, and we had the slogan, "The fire next time," meaning our demands were not met, it might be a fire at Hovey Hall. And we took over Hovey Hall, and we did without violence, but it made the campus wake up to some of the things we're dealing with. Because, you know, when you're small and nimble, nobody pays any attention to you.
Yeah.
And we're just going along, not saying anything. Everybody thinks it's hunky-dory, and that wasn't the case. And by the march that we did on Hovey Hall, it got the attention of administration, and that was in the spring of 1968. And needless to say, out of all that, we did get one black faculty member on campus in the fall of 68. But I think that set the stage for the type of person Leroy was, because he was not afraid of rocking the boat. Yeah. And he also knew that since he was the best player on Purdue's football team, mm-hmm. sometimes rank has its privileges. And Leroy was safe from any repercussions from the athletic department, which is a lot different today because, well, up until probably last year, a lot of student athletes would not rock the boat because they knew they would be shown the way out the door. But Leroy's case, as great as he was, that was not the case. But I think Leroy's stance showed the difference between today's relationship between student athletes and non-student athletes, and that back then there was more interaction between the student athlete and the student and the regular student body, as it is today, where student athletes, you know, they do weights in the morning, go to class, practice, eat, go to study hall. That's it. Very little interaction.
Yeah, I think that's an extremely important distinction to make, certainly. I had a personal story in 1967. My dad worked in the at the University Foundation and got and then was involved in some other things, but he always went to practice, and you could go to practice, and some townspeople did that. I think Ralphie probably met you at basketball practice from time to time. But my point is, he invited Leroy Keyes and Clanton King over to our house for dinner. And, you know, I'm what, 7, 8 years old. And I want to tell, if it had been social media, I'd have been seventh grade on Instagram telling everybody I had Leroy Keyes coming to my house for dinner. But what an experience for me. Never really thought, because I was 7 or 8 years old, never really thought about the black white thing or any of that. But I thought, man, what a great deal to have this person come, and what and how it probably wasn't easy for him, in all honesty. I'm sure that it wasn't, but you would never have known that. He came onto our we were out shooting baskets in our driveway when he and Clanton pulled up, and he shot a couple baskets, because I'd heard of how he was a player. But then we always laugh in the Karpik family about Leroy didn't like, for what, I don't know if maybe my mom was a food manager at Owen Hall, and mm-hmm. Tom Dienhart also had a mother that was involved in food service at the university too. And my point is, that's also how she knew him. And Leroy, she I don't know, maybe I wasn't eating my vegetables or whatever, but she thought, oh, I'm going to come in here and Leroy's going to eat his green beans and everything. Leroy didn't want to touch them. Oh, I never touched the stuff. So I think in our family, we always said, well, Leroy set me back from a dietary standpoint for 10 years. But it was one of the great moments of my life, just because, even though it was my young life, of A, having that opportunity, and then reflecting maybe when I got older to realize, you know, the significance of that at the time, and what an experience it was for me. But Leroy and Clanton were great to, and we had several over the years when it was legal to do so. We'd have the Frank Kendricks of the world and others at the home. But that was a big part of my growing up, and it all started with Leroy Keyes and the experience that I had here. But he just was always gracious. And you never would have known, and didn't really like to, at least to me, didn't always want to talk about his football exploits over the years. But he loved his playing career, loved what he was on the football field as a player and as a coach. Of course, he came back to Purdue in 1995, to coach with Jim Coletto as well. So this was a big part of his life, and something that, I'll never forget. And he was always gracious to me over the years, and always fun to have an interview with, because he had an opinion about a lot of things, and that was fun too.
Yeah, that was Leroy. And, the other interesting thing about Leroy is that, again, he comes from the segregated South.
Yeah.
And Purdue is the bastion of conservatism, where a lot of the students have never seen a black person, but yeah. Of course, Leroy had never seen a white person. But realizing what he did from the time he set foot on campus, and by the time he left in 69, he was one of the most recognizable, most well-beloved figures, regardless of your black or white, in the history of the Purdue campus during that four-year period. And he just changed the attitudes of so many people, not only from an athletic standpoint, but also from the fact that he was just a genuine, down-earth person, wasn't bothered any ego or anything like that. Just really down-earth, regular person.
Yeah, he always went out of his way to give to others and to try to kind of walk in your shoes, which I always thought was an interesting way of looking things. And he taught me that, certainly. Tom, you know, we and I said this off the air, but I've said this publicly before about the two players that since I've been going to Ross-Ade Stadium, and that was 1966, was my first game, would have been Leroy's sophomore year. But the audible sound when Leroy Keyes touched the football, when he got it and on that sweep. Now, he was as good a receiver as he was running back. And in fact, he really didn't have all, he was not a punishing runner. He didn't carry the ball 30 times a game. In fact, I don't think he ever had a game where he carried it more than 25. But the sound that it made when he got the ball was there's two guys, one Leroy Keyes, the other number four, Rondale Moore. That same sound came, I remember it coming back in 2018 and hearing that sound again when Moore had the game against Northwestern in his first college game. It was like that was Leroy Keyes all over again. And there aren't many others that have had that experience. You know, you talk about that iconic, Tom, we were watching some highlights of him today. Again, he could do anything on the football field, and that's what made him unique as a player.
Yeah, again, just a special talent, guys. Like I said earlier, I really wish I would have had a chance to see him play in person. And, yeah, I don't know, like you, I was there in Ross-Ade, that 2018 opener against Northwestern, to see Rondale Moore, what he was able to do with the football in his hands that day throughout the entire 2018 season. And boy, what a special player. And again, from everything I can tell, Leroy was the same type of guy. And it was fun talking to him again, like I said, a couple of years ago for the story. And he told me back then that there was a teacher at his high school, I think it was Carver High, who really was served as a big impetus for him to come to Purdue, and really sort of pushed him and kept after him to do that. And I thought that was interesting that the guidance that was given him by a high school teacher turned out to be so profound for Leroy and really helped shape his future. And I think I was also told, too, looking back at that story, that it was a rival coach that kind of turned on the Purdue assistant coach. I'm trying to find his name here again.
Bernie Miller.
Yeah, Bernie Miller. Right. It was a rival coach by the name of Marv Levy.
Yeah, right. And he credited him. Yeah.
Turned on Bernie to Leroy. He said, you need to check out this kid at Carver High. So it's kind of fun to hear those backstories and really see how Leroy was pointed toward West Lafayette.
Yeah, two of the greatest athletes in Purdue sports history, Leroy Keyes and as Ralph talked about, Herman Gilliam, in the segregated South, you know, they would have never come to Purdue in today's world in all likelihood. You know, I know that Herman had an opportunity at Minnesota, and his mother kind of pushed him. And Ralph probably knows a lot more of this story than I do about coming to West Lafayette. Leroy was very much the same and had that opportunity to come and be a part. One thing, Ralph, and I don't know how much he can comment, it's just, you know, obviously Leroy came back to Purdue and worked on Jim Coletto's staff for a couple of years. Actually was on Joe Tiller's staff kind of not as a full-time assistant, but it was on there for the first year, worked in the John Purdue club as well. But he remained, I thought Leroy always had a unique relationship with student athletes, maybe many more of color, but not necessarily. But he had that iconic role from 1995 all the way up to 2021 in terms of his role with all those athletes over the years on campus. I don't know how much you can speak to that, but I think that was a significant part of his of what he gave to his alma mater in terms of service.
Well, absolutely. I think Leroy made a point of introducing himself to those guys, because a lot of them were, well, most of them were not even, well, they were not born when he played, but they had heard of the great Leroy Keyes. He always made a point to introduce himself to those guys, and he was kind of like the godfather for them. Yeah. I think if they had any issues or questions, they would seek his guidance and counsel, and he was more than happy to do that for them.
Yeah, he had that ability to do that. With the nickname, he had a bunch of nicknames. I don't know who nicknamed him. The Golden Mr. Do Everything was one of his. He obviously finished third in the Heisman Trophy in 1967 when he led the nation in scoring in college football. In 68, he finished second to O.J. Simpson. And we And in 67, he finished third to Gary Beeman in that role. But, you know, you think about that and what role he played. And he only played on television, I want to say, maybe four or five times in his college career. I mean, that's all Purdue was on. They were on the Rose Bowl. He played probably one of the most famous, iconic games, which you can watch on YouTube. If you're a Purdue fan, you have to see it to believe it. 1968, Purdue-Notre Dame. Both teams ranked number one in opposite polls up in South Bend. And a spoiler alert, Purdue wins that game handily. And Leroy Keyes was probably might have been the favorite for the Heisman Trophy early on that year. Had a couple injuries in 68. Purdue lost a couple games, and Simpson went on to win the Heisman. But this is a guy that captured the imagination of the nation as a player. And even Tom, in your travels over the years in college football, that name resonates. If you know college football, you know Leroy Keyes.
Yeah, exactly right. It's funny, I was just watching a program on ESPN Classic about Gordy Lockbaum.
Yeah.
Yep, I remember that name.
Holy Cross.
Yeah, Holy Cross.
Sort of a guy who did everything, a Swiss Army knife, if you will. And in that little episode, they talked about the last guy who did this was Leroy Keyes of Purdue University. They splashed the picture of Leroy up there. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, there's, you know, Leroy sort of, I think, because he wasn't a great pro, maybe his star fell a little bit. But, again, those of that generation and real college football cognoscente know who Leroy Keyes is, knows about his career, knows about his impact at Purdue and in the Big Ten as well. So, again, guys, third in the Heisman, I think, in 67, second in 68, the infamous O.J. Simpson, right?
Yeah.
In the NFL draft in 1969, played with the Eagles about 3 years, finished up with the Chiefs in 1973, worked in Philadelphia, I guess, as a school desegregation specialist.
Right.
And then, as Alan said, I remember him coming back to Purdue under Coletto and helping coach Mike Allstott. And Leroy never left West Lafayette after he arrived, what that would have been in the early 90s, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting on him because you're right. I don't know how much, if at all, he got back between 1970 and 87. He may have been back some. I don't know, Ralph, if you could speak to that. But it was a big deal, at least when he did come back in 87 and for the 100-year anniversary and being named the all-time greatest player. That meant a lot to him and kind of reconnected him, at least in my mind, to Purdue University. But he had a lot of guys, and there were a lot of players that were in that era, you know, in football, Billy McCoy, John Bullock, and there are many, many more that Leroy was very close friends with for many, many years, and became kept those guys really connected to Purdue as well. So Leroy played an extremely important role with that, and not just the African American players. I mean, I've heard today from Jim Bonk. I've heard from I reached out to Mike Phipps, but Mike Phipps has the great quarterback and who also finished a runner up in the Heisman Trophy in 1969. You know, there's a love for Leroy there, yeah. and what he meant, you know, yes, Mike Phipps was a talent, but that was a pretty talented outfit when you had Mike Phipps at quarterback and Leroy Keyes and Tim Foley, that is talented a Purdue football program as it's ever had. Ralph, I was going to ask last thing as we put a wrap on this, and it's kind of tough to do this on the day that this all happened, because there's going to be a lot of thoughts that are going to come our way. One of the things that's important, and I've already seen an initiative brought forward about hopefully getting some legacy recognition, I would say, for Keyes in terms of in the area 231, which is the new expressway on the west side of campus. Somebody had put together some thoughts about renaming ability to be able to rename that expressway around campus for Leroy Keyes. This is a name that will live forever, but something also that will further cement his legacy.
Well, certainly, I think if it goes through, and of course, that
just started
today. And
yeah,
but President Mitch Daniels has been presented with the proposed initiative. So if it goes through, I think it would be great. Then I heard from another Boilermaker, not an athlete, but a former student manager, who said it'd also be nice to rename one of the end zones the key zone, because he was always in the end zone scoring touchdowns. So,
yeah.
But I think that would be a great honor for Leroy to have bypass 231, or maybe even the street going between Mackey and the backside of Ross Age Stadium, Keys Way or something like that. I think anything to remember him. And, you know, just one other final thing, Alan and Tom, that is when Leroy played defense at Southmore.
Yeah.
Switched offense his junior and senior year. And the interesting thing was when he lined up at tailback, the defense knew where the ball was going for the most part. And to show you how great he was and how great the offensive line was, they still couldn't stop it.
Yeah, no doubt. He was, and when you talked about the Gordy Lockbaum analogy, you know, Keys in 67 and 68, this is getting a little bit into the weeds, but Jim Seymour, the great receiver for Notre Dame in 66, had a huge game against Purdue. And then 67 and 68, when Keys was playing offense, they put him in key situations of much of those games. He got a chance to play and really shut down Seymour and Terry Hanratty, the quarterback at Notre Dame. Purdue had great victories over the Fighting Irish those years. And, you know, the thing also, the Leroy's pro career, he had an Achilles, he had some injury issues, I think Achilles tendon issue, and that was made it difficult for him to do the thing, and also going to play defense right away for the Philadelphia Eagles was this thing that we talked about over the years in terms of what that meant to him, you don't know, but he was still one of the greatest two-way players in the history of college football right here at Purdue. And yes, today is a sad day, but it was great, Tom and Ralph, to be able to share some of these memories and be able to do that as well.
Hey, Alan, can I share one other thing real quick? His nickname coming out of high school was Nursey.
Yeah.
And the Mr. Golden, everything. That, those who were in the fraternity would call him Nursey and Brother Key.
That is a true thing. All right, guys, thanks so much for your time, and we enjoyed the conversation on a difficult day. There'll be more to come, more coverage of Leroy Keys and what he meant to Purdue sports, Purdue football, Purdue University on down the road. Have a great rest of the day, guys.
Okay, thanks, Alan.
Thank you. Hello.